Welcome to Nature Bracket Podcast, where we speak with investors and entrepreneurs about the green economy. My name is Tarmo Virki, and today my guest is Peter Kroll from Earth Equity Advisors.
Welcome, Peter, to Nature Bracket.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Tell us a few words what you exactly do.
Well, I am at the base of it, I'm a financial advisor. I have been doing sustainable investing since 2004. So actually, it's almost 19 years. It'll be 19 years in June. And before that, I was independently. Before that, I was at Merrill Lynch and was doing traditional financial advising. But what I do now is I help put together portfolios that help people align their investments with their values. That's the best way to say it. Mm-hmm.
The sustainable investing for 19 years, this must be longer than sustainable investing has been, you know, making headlines.
It's definitely longer than it's been making headlines. When I started, SRI didn't stand for sustainable responsible investing. It stood for socially responsible investing. And so it's interesting. I've been able to watch over the years this evolution that's taken place to go from a socially focused perspective to more sustainable justice, governance. You know, ESG has come into play. There's just been a whole number of different things that have changed, some for the good, some for the bad.
Exactly. And so like the example of the, you know, carbon offset industry, which people from the industry say it's definitely changing the world for the better. People who look a little bit under the surface are saying that it's all a big scam.
Yeah.
What's your
take? Everything that I've read about it, And I'm not an expert on it, so I'll start by saying that. But everything I've read about it is that it's rife with problems, double counting, and just issues across the board where you really can't put a lot of faith into it. It's not the kind of thing where we're going to put clients' money in as an investment. That's for sure.
Mm. At least in Europe, corporations are obliged to go into it. And the governments are somehow in it. I'm not aware how it's exactly in the US, but in Europe, I've been telling to the people that if I would set up a fund, I would put the whole fund into the carbon offsets, because everybody in Europe has promised to be carbon net zero by 2030, which, you know, all the logic says that in 2029, we will be seeing prices skyrocketing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing is, you know, the 2020 or the 2030 goal is great, but for the most part, it's just sort of everybody saying, well, it's really going to be 2050, but 2030 is what we put on the surface to make it look good. And 2050 is too late. 2030 really is where we need to start hitting some of these targets. And especially here in the States, I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago at University of North Carolina on clean tech. And the keynote speaker was the CEO of a major utility, Dominion Energy, here in the Mid-Atlantic. And he was complaining about regulations, you know, stopping them from being able to implement. And I'm just sitting there thinking, this seems really disingenuous to me. So I really quickly got on my phone and I looked up to see, you know, how much revenue and how much profit are these guys making? So, the last 12 months, they've made $17 billion in revenue and $7 billion in EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization. So telling me that you've got problems doing implementation while you're making $7 billion in profit just doesn't ring true. And so I wrote a nice blog piece about it, complaining about these guys, because they're the ones that are getting in the way. They're the ones that are the big emitters. They're the ones that they like the way their tax situation is right now, and they don't want to lose any of the benefits for these big, fossil fuel plants that they built. So they slowly want to move off of those before they start getting into, renewables.
How can financial industry have an impact? If a client comes to you saying that, hey, I have a family portfolio of, I don't know, X million, we want to, you know, make money, but at the same time, we want to make the world a better place. What kind of advice do you give to such people?
So we start out by, I'm going to take a step back here and do some definitions. So we see in the media constantly ESG, ESG, ESG. Well, ESG is just a set of numbers, right? All it is a set of metrics that look at the risk associated with environment for a company, with their social risk and with their governance risk. That's it. And what we see is a lot of fund companies are simply taking those metrics, they're layering them on top of a traditional index like the S&P 500 or, you know, EAFE, which is the developed markets, and just layering on it, and they're making them what I call less bad. All right. So instead of having, let's say, 2.5% of ExxonMobil, you have 1.5% of ExxonMobil. That's really not doing a whole heck of a lot right there. And every time I'm giving a talk, one of the things I'll always ask is, if I sold you or bought a sustainable portfolio for you, would you expect to see ExxonMobil in there? And not a single hand ever goes up, because they don't consider sustainable investing less bad investing. What I consider sustainable investing is positive and solutions based. And so that's the first distinction I always like to make in these conversations, is the difference between ESG and sustainable investing. So ESG investing, this is the best way I can say it. So an ESG portfolio that reduces its exposure to ExxonMobil is less bad. One that eliminates it entirely is better, but one that replaces it with First Solar is actually sustainable. And so to go to your question, what I would say is, let's take a look at your portfolio and let's take a look at what your holdings are now. Do you own fossil fuels? If yes, we're going to get rid of them because they're contributing to the problem. And by having an allocation to them, that is money that we could instead be allocating to companies that are making a difference, to First Solar, whatever it is. And so, you know, for me, That's how I would start a conversation with somebody like that, is let's assess what you have and let's figure out how we can switch up those companies that you currently have that are part of the problem, and let's put them towards solutions, because ultimately at the end of the day, we need solutions.
Do you see a trend from the kind of investor side, from the LP side, or the people with money side? Do they actually come with this kind of requests?
It depends. Because all we do is sustainable investing, they're definitely coming to us for it.
Yes,
so I don't see somebody who's coming to me asking from a more neutral perspective or a more traditional investing perspective. They come to us knowing full well that we're going to help them align their investments with their values. In general, across the industry, yes, we are continuing to see that go up. A lot of it is based on age. So millennials have a much, much greater interest in sustainable investing. Women typically have a greater interest than men do. But those are broad generalizations. You know, we still have, there's still a lot of boomers, the ones who were the tree huggers of the early 70s. They do not want to own companies that are not aligned with them. And they do want to own the solutions providers. And, you know, when I think about sustainable investing too, and related to climate change specifically, you know, the climate change train has already left the station, right? You know, we're already seeing the impacts of it. You know, as we're recording this right now, Fort Lauderdale down in Florida has flooding without any real weather going on. It's because sea level is rising, et cetera. So sustainability to me is investing in companies that are going to make, you know, reduce our exposure to carbon emissions, but also resiliency. Because like I said, the climate change train has already left the station. We need to invest in companies that are creating more resiliency in our economies.
What kind of examples would you mention on the resiliency side?
So on the resiliency side, we want to look at like companies that are designing and building infrastructure that is going to be more resilient to greater storms. Out west we have wildfires. How can we better survive in those particular environments? Because people are not going to want to move out of there. So how can we better survive in those environments? Obviously, the best thing to do, at least on the coast, is to move inland. But people aren't necessarily going to do that. So how do we protect New York, which is, you know, basically sitting, you know, which is an island, right? How do we protect places like that? So companies that are really focusing on that kind of infrastructure. I think there's a certain amount of technology that we can look at as well. How is technology going to give us more information that we can use to predict storms, to build, a lot of it is about the built environment, right? Mm. So, you know, how can we create a better built environment that is going to be more resistant?
Mm. Two examples we've been speaking about here in the show. So also, one I remember was a case where a company is building the fire alarm systems for the forest fires.
Yep.
And that's increasingly important also in Europe. I think we are in April. Yeah. I think in March we saw the first forest fires of this summer. And if you think, you know, forest fires of summer in March, that's just crazy.
Yeah.
The other example, we spoke recently with a team which is starting to build sustainable cities from scratch. So going to, like, you know, totally greenfield project somewhere in the northern Chile and starting from zero, which sounds like a really intriguing place to visit sometimes when it's ready in some years' time from today.
Yeah, one of my original influences, I had two influences when I got into this business. One is my wife, who's much, much smarter than I am. She has two PhDs and she helped me sort of create what we're doing. But another person is a guy named Bill McDonough. And Bill McDonough is a green architect. And, you know, we're going back 20 plus years, and he was doing exactly what you just described, creating sustainable cities from scratch. And I know that he's done some of that in China, or at least he was back then. I'm not sure what he's doing now. I haven't seen him in years. But doing that exact same thing. How do we start from scratch and build in a way that it is regenerative, that is resilient, and that is ultimately sustainable?
Exactly. And that's the challenge for many of the projects, also on a kind of environmental green tech projects or whatever you call them. The at best, many of them are, you know, making things a little bit better, not kind of going down to the zero.
Right. Yeah. And you know, obviously, when I talk about investing, you know, we don't have to accept less bad. You know, we can exactly. Just simply make transitions. However, when we're talking about, you know, the built environment and some of these other things, it is going to be incremental. We can't just suddenly switch all of our building stock over to solar or wind or anything like that. That is going to be incremental. But the biggest thing we can do is get the obstacles out of the way that make those increments much smaller than they need to be.
Exactly. And talking about the obstacles, I think you mentioned earlier there, one of the obstacles speaking at a conference lately, these kind of challenges are kind of common. What's your take on the kind of investor activism? Are you involved at all, or do you see much of the kind of sustainable or environmentally conscious activist investments?
Now, for us, because we really focus on investing in the companies that are making a difference, we aren't as active on the shareholder advocacy side because mm-hmm. we're buying the ones we want to buy. We're not trying to change them. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, that has been a really good route to take companies that are, you know, middle of the road, that you know, they're not the leaders, but they're certainly not the laggards, and try to push them to be better. Where I have a problem with is people who are using shareholder advocacy with fossil fuel companies, because at the end of the day, they're still going to be a fossil fuel company. They're still going to be the ones that are the greatest threat to our civilization, ultimately, right? And so, you know, they simply need to go away. You can vote all you want on your proxy. They're still going to do what they're doing.
Exactly. That's a little bit of a similar challenge with the whole carbon offset industry. I'm trying to describe sometimes to the people that, you know, offsets are something when you buy when you actually have done bad.
Exactly.
It's like the church had those
penance.
When you sinned, you went to pay to the church, and then everybody was, you know, hunky dory.
Yeah. Yeah, you can go kill somebody, but you know, and then you go to the church. Hey, you know what? Here's some. It's not penance, but there's a certain word for it. I can't remember it.
Yes, there is the.
My religious upbringing is failing me right now. I don't. It's been too long ago.
Same here. I know in my language, but the English is here the challenge. Going forward, what's your kind of, you said that we talked a little bit about the 2030 is the kind of target where everybody should actually be aiming for, even though they don't yet understand that's as urgent. Looking forward, you know, what do you look for, you know, in coming years? The climate is getting worse. Younger generations are putting more money in the greener investment. Is it too late?
I don't think it's too late. I think that we have opportunities. I think that I don't want to rely on technology to save us, because we can't do that. That basically gives us license to maintain business as usual. We can't do that. One of the questions that I get asked often is, are you optimistic about things? And I think that you can't not be optimistic. We have to look forward to something that is going to, carry us on and help us to thrive. I think that's probably the best word is I want us to be able to thrive. And so by getting as many assets as I possibly can and transitioning them onto the solution side, onto the resiliency and sustainable side, we're making our difference. Do I think that we're going to hit it by 2030? The realist in me says probably not. There's just too many entrenched interests with way too much money that are obstacles. That being said, there is a ton of money, and I've got a Bloomberg New Energy Finance report literally sitting in front of me for a presentation that I'm going to be giving in about 2 weeks, and it's trillions of dollars that is going into this. And that is going to have to go into this for us to hit the targets that we need to maintain some semblance of the kind of lifestyle that we're living going, 20, 30, 50 years from now. Again, the realistic side of me says this is going to be hard to do. The optimistic side of me says we have the capability to do it. And when I see younger people who are in the streets marching, who are changing the way they're investing, who are inheriting money from parents and grandparents and completely shifting the way that their investments are, that does give me hope. So I don't know if that answers it. That's sort of like I'm playing both sides of it, but I don't think there's any other way.
I think I agree. I mean, being a journalist by profession, I'm, you know, born cynical. I think the cynicism is in the veins, and when you read the IPCC reports and so on, you kind of look at it and think that, you know, it's kind of lost battle. Yeah. At the same time, speaking with you here and speaking with people innovating also on the technology side and kind of changing the world, it's kind, you know, there is definitely some hope.
Yeah, there most definitely is. And I think if we lose hope, then we're really going to spiral. We can't allow that to happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm the same as you. My degree is actually in communication. So I've done journalism and writing for, you know, a long, long time. So there is a cynic in me as well. I'm actually in the process of writing a book right now on sustainable investing for financial advisors. And it's interesting. I was writing the introduction not long ago, And thinking about lessons that I've learned in this industry, you know, there's a couple things that stuck out. One of them, especially, is that when you miss an opportunity, you can't feel bad about it. You just need to look for the next one. And that's really where we are at this point. There's going to be a lot of misses. I mean, this idea of carbon capture, I think, is a ludicrous idea. Let's continue to burn fossil fuels, but we're just going to pump the carbon underground. Really? Why don't you just not burn it in the first place? But anyways, there's always going to be a next opportunity. And so, you know, that's a big source of my optimism comes from, is just experience of having been in this business for a long time.
Good. As a, you know, sustainability sector financial advisor who has some optimism looking into the future, what do you think are the kind of next challenges this year? What are you looking out for?
Well, obviously, there's a lot of headwinds economically that we're dealing with right now. Mm-hmm. From, you know, potential recession. Most people think that, or most economists think, we're gonna hit a recession at some point. Interest rates are going to make it a little harder for these more innovative companies to have cash to be able to fund themselves and fund their R&D. Hopefully, we will continue to see some government support like we saw in the Inflation Reduction Act. You know, I look at EVs as being a huge opportunity. As we're recording this, the EPA here in the United States is working on some rules to make it harder on the internal combustion side, which is theoretically going to push more people to the EV side. But we also have some roadblocks there, because when you look at a map of EV charging stations across the U.S., there's a lot of blank space where, you know, there's nowhere that you can charge. And I've driven EVs for several years, for, gosh, 7-8 years now. And I've dealt with those, you know, with the anxiety that comes along with, gosh, how am I going to get from point A to point B? I'm going to have to turn the air conditioning off, and I'm going to have to, you know, whatever it takes to get to that next charging station.
And so on. Exactly.
Yeah. So we've got some challenges currently. The EV charging is going to be overcome. That I don't really have any concerns about that. And the economy is going to come back. It always does. It's a cycle, right? Mm-hmm. And so it may be in the short term, when we look at the growth-oriented investments, which typically we're investing in, they're probably not going to be the greatest outperformers. But when you look on the longer term, from a longer term perspective, it's the only place I would want to be invested.
Exactly. That's a good point to start wrapping up, I think, the discussion. The episode comes out next week at the Earth Day, or on Great. The week of the Earth Day. So we'll be celebrating this with a sustainable investment focus. Thanks, Peter.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Thanks, Peter, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for a great conversation.
Hey there, fabulous souls. I'm Stephanie Baklaan.
And I'm Eden Upper.
And we're the hosts of the brand new podcast, Unapologetically Fab.
Get ready to join us on an amazing and real journey as we dive into life after 40 and own it.
We're all about changing the narrative, leaning into who you are, and living a life by your own design.
Join us as we embrace life unapologetically and redefine success.
This is Unapologetically Fab,
an Electric Cat production.
See you there.
Have you ever wondered what actually happens in Congress every day? Stay informed on Capitol Hill's daily happenings with a concise, factual summary of the Senate and House of Representatives' activities from the previous session, free from bias, on the Congressional Record Daily Digest podcast. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and discover the process from the heart of U.S. politics. The Congressional Record Daily Digest, an Electricast production.
Electricast. Electric Acid.